Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, hey, hey. It is opening night. How fired up are you? Real football, Super Bowl redo, if you want to say it, in Denver. Man, this is going to be big. A great game. Two of the best teams in the league. Real live football. In case you're new, you know, in case you are just tuning into the season and haven't been into the preseason, this is the Locked On NFL podcast. I am Matt Williamson. I am your host. You and I are going to chat 5 days a week, belly up to my bar, and we're just going to talk about a couple subjects every day about what's going on around the league. And so far, we've gotten a very, very good response. And especially today, I urge you to check out Locked On Broncos, Locked On Panthers. You know, they're going to go even deeper into a lot of things we might see tonight. And their Friday shows, I'm sure, will go a lot deeper into what we saw tonight as well, you know, recapping. And we're going to do that too. On Friday, we are going to recap this thing. I can't wait to watch it. I'm going to watch every snap, of course. And then we're going to preview all the game's actions, too. I'm going to pick every game. So I don't know how much detail we'll be able to go into tomorrow on every game. But something. I mean, every game is going to be discussed in some degree. Might have a longer show than usual. I don't know. It's my first Friday of picking games with you guys. So we will see how that goes. But what I want to do now, and I kind of mentioned this yesterday, was I was very proud of the Super Bowl preview I wrote for today's Pigskin. You know, I've done a lot of these things. I mean, I've been writing for, 11 years now. But I thought it turned out very, very well, and I did a lot of research with it when previewing the game. You know, not reviewing the game, previewing the game, but the big Super Bowl 50. So I pulled that document out, and I just put a few things in bold that I'm just going to read right off of the sheet that I did then. And I have other notes, too, that we'll get to. Don't worry. But they're very prominent now. You know, I mean, and some of it, a lot of it came to fruition. But we are going to start with when Carolina has the ball. And a couple of those, a couple nuggets that I'm just going to read you guys and elaborate on after that are: unlike any rushing attack in the league, the Panthers' running game starts with the quarterback. And then to piggyback off that about a sentence or two later, the Panthers' offense starts with the league's most diverse and possibly most physical rushing attack. If you don't know, the Panthers are very much a, I would say a run-first team. But yeah, they're a run-first team. But what's strange about them is they plan on having their quarterbacks carry the ball, their quarterback, Cam Newton, obviously, running the ball a lot. And they know he's going to take hits. And they didn't do any of that in the preseason on purpose, obviously. But because they can make that such a foundation of their running game, and their interior offensive line is especially really good with their running game. They're an interior. They run inside, they run outside, but I think they're a better inside running team. Stewart's more of a runner that way. Newton as well. But because everything starts with Newton, they throw a different kind of package at you than most teams. They're really hard to prepare for. And a lot of it stems off the threat of Newton being able to carry the ball extremely well. And he's not like Michael Vick, Randall Cunningham, Steve Young. He's more like Mike Allstott. You know, I mean, he's a big human being. And I forget who I was just talking to the other day about that had met him and was saying, you know, he blows you away when you meet him in person. That he looks like a defensive end. And he plays like it. However, these teams played not that long ago. And the Broncos should be well equipped to handle that. You know, I thought the Panthers got away from their running game far too much in the Super Bowl. And part of that is because the Broncos, well, the Broncos are a dime defense when they go to sub. That's something that's worth noting. And I'm kind of getting off track here a little bit, but it's important because when I say that, whenever they decide to go to their sub package, they take a nose tackle and an inside linebacker off the field, and they put a safety and a corner. So they have six defensive backs on the field. They're a dime defense. One of the reasons is because they're very good at corner and in the defensive backfield in general. So if they're going to play a lot of dime against, you know, three receiver sets or whatever, and especially factoring Newton's ability to run, I think it's a real crime if the Panthers just really don't make this a very run-oriented offense. Because, I mean, I can't see Denver running away with this game. I think it's going to be close. So I think Carolina needs to stick with the run, even though Denver knows what they're getting. Okay, another facet of when Carolina has the ball that I, going back to the Super Bowl preview that I wrote, the Panthers have a very good offensive line, but it is at an athletic disadvantage and can be prone to allowing pressure, especially off the edges and especially from Michael Orr on the left side. Mike Remmers will not be able to handle Von Miller alone on the right. But the Broncos will not have the immense advantage of crowd noise on their side like they did versus New England when they meet Carolina in the Super Bowl. Well, I was pretty right about that. Mike Remmers will not be able to handle Von Miller alone on the right. And amazingly, in the Super Bowl, they left Remmers against Miller alone a lot. And according to Pro Football Focus, I read this yesterday, Newton was pressured 33 times in the Super Bowl. 33 times. That's unbelievable. And we all watched the game. They have to do something better than that. Whatever they decide to do, whether it's constantly chipping Miller with a running back or using six offensive linemen with an extra lineman on Remmer's side or Miller's side, rolling protection that way. And actually, Carolina is very good when they bring an extra offensive lineman in. That might not be a bad idea at all. But then you got the problem on the other side. We didn't see it as much in the Super Bowl. But Michael Orr is not a very good, he's not very good in protection. You know, that because the nature of their scheme, because they're so run first, the Panthers have cut corners at the offensive tackle position. They don't on the interior, they do on the offensive line or tackle. And it's worked extremely well for them. I mean, obviously they were in the Super Bowl last year. But against Miller and Ware and Ray, and they have a ton of edge pass rushers led by Miller, obviously. So that's another reason they have to stick with the run more than they did in the Super Bowl. But, and then going back to the point, I mean, yes, the Super Bowl's loud, but there's a lot of suits in the stadium. You know, it's going to be louder today. I mean, it's going to be more of an advantage off the snap today than it was in the Super Bowl. Tonight, in Denver opening night, the place is going to be loud, man. So, Miller and Ware and those guys are going to be exploding off the snap. So they're very capable of utterly wrecking this game once again, as they did the first time along. So then they got the issues on the back end. And, a couple things I'm going to read here is, Wade Phillips will probably vary his coverages quite a bit. Denver's defense does an excellent job defending the deep ball, and we know Carolina will take their shots deep. In order to do that, you have to protect. Carolina is very much a shot play team. Ted Ginn is often the guy that does that, but it could be Benjamin, it could be Funchess. The corners for Denver, though, are just superb. Just superb. They can play some zone, but they're more man-oriented corners. I would think you're going to get a lot of man coverage here. One of the problems with playing predominantly man against Carolina and why teams don't is the last thing you want to do is having your defenders turn their back on Newton with their eyes on their wide receiver or respective tight end. So you want a lot more teams play zone against Carolina. Denver's capable of mixing and matching coverages, and judging by the Super Bowl, I would imagine they will do that a fair amount. I thought Newton looked rattled for much of the Super Bowl. Didn't trust what he saw. You know, his mechanics stiffened up. If you watch him throw, his bottom half is not real fundamentally sound as a passer. He's kind of a stiff lower body thrower. But he's so talented and so gifted, he muscles the ball there. He's gotten better, but he had some moments in the preseason, too, that made you wonder. Another note here, Denver's defense has notoriously struggled against tight ends over the past few seasons. And I don't see anything that's changed since last year to think that's going to be any different. If anything, losing Trevathan will even make that worse. Who knows? But, of course, that lends itself to Olsen. I think for Carolina to win tonight, Olsen needs to have a very big game. And he's certainly capable. He's certainly Newton's favorite target. And I think you have to note, you know, you have to mention, too, that they have Benjamin now. They did not have him in the Super Bowl. And that's fine. I just don't think he's a massive difference maker, especially against a team like this, a defensive team like that. And that pretty much sums up that side of the ball. You know, so what do we expect? I mean, I can't see Carolina scoring a ton of points. You know, I think Newton is going to come out very fired up, you know, maybe too fired up. I could see them taking a while to get in sync with their passing game. I think that's a possibility. And Denver's pass rush at home is ridiculous. So they're going to have to control the game on the ground. Probably a lot of Newton runs, a lot of Stewart. But I think there's going to be a lot of three and outs, too. But they got to avoid the big mistake, and there's absolutely no way that Newton can afford to be pressured 33 times. 33 times. And you can't leave Remmers alone with Von Miller, or the game is going to get wrecked. I don't know what else to say about that. But now I want to tell you about SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a big supporter of the Locked On Network. And, hey, if you're interested in advertising with us as well, drop me a line. Or if it's even just this specific podcast. Advertisers are flooding us right now, and it just shows, you know, we're doing some good things here. But SeatGeek is really doing some good things. And I'm thinking about taking my son to Pitt Penn State this weekend. And I might have to pull it out. You know, I have the app on my phone. I might have to give it a shot, you know. And I bet some of you in the Denver region are thinking, man, I should have got tickets tonight. I mean, how great is this game going to be? Or really, any of the week one games that, man, I wasn't going to go. But, man, I'm too fired up. I got to go. Well, use the SeatGeek app, you know. Use the LO, as in Locked On, NFL, and you will save you get a $20 rebate on your first purchase with SeatGeek. That's phenomenal. I mean, that's a big chunk of your first two tickets. LONFL is the promo code, and you get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. That's phenomenal. You know, and these guys do terrific work. You can pretty much get tickets anytime you need. SeatGeek is better because it's mobile friendly. I mentioned I have the app on my phone. It's a very easy experience. The tickets delivered in the app, you know, which is pretty cool. You know, you don't print them out, or you know, oh, but where do I pick up my tickets? Or, you know, do I print them here? No, you just walk to the gate with the barcode, flash them to the dude that usually takes tickets, and you're in. You know, it's just right there. It's all on your phone. And they rate every ticket from 1 to 100 to tell you what kind of bang for your buck you get for your tickets, which is a great service. You gotta love that. Again, you get $20 rebate on tickets with your promo code. When someone enters your promo code LONFL, Locked On NFL, I think you get it. When they purchase the first ticket, they won't see the rebate, and then they will receive it in the mail, and they get an email after the purchase to assure that they had it. You can sign up for price alerts for events. It will let you know when the pricing is for an event. Prices can drop as you get closer to the game. You know, just think about it. If Denver all of a sudden realizes, or any game this weekend, realizes that, boy, we have a couple seats here that are, and it's getting close to game time, you might be able to weasel your way in there and get a good deal on it by using the app. You know, we're just right in time. Or go down and tailgate with your buddies and buy them in the parking lot, you know, as it gets closer. So, yeah, prices can drop as you get closer to the game. And SeatGeek will let you know if a ticket is in your price range. That's a great alert situation. That's awesome. So there you have it. This is something I think you need to do. Again, use the promo code LONFL. All right, let's get back to tonight's game. And let's talk about when the home team has the ball. First of all, before we get into that, there's some changes, obviously, at the quarterback position. And I think that needs to be addressed before we talk about things from last year. You know, Trevor Siemian's going to start. And, man, I mean, do yourself a favor. Go back and look at his stats at Northwestern. They're horrible. I mean, they're horrible. A lot more turnovers than I expected, too. I mean, and then the talk about him and what I've been telling you all along is they're going to start Siemian as a placeholder over Sanchez because he's less prone to mistakes. He'll throw the ball away. He's much more of a caretaker. And I think all those things are true, but he didn't do a lot of that at Northwestern. And he frightens me. You know, he frightens me a lot. And that's a big deal. And certainly Peyton Manning was not a good NFL quarterback last year. But what Manning would do is he would always get his team still in the right call. You know, if you're going to show me this front, I'm going to audible to a run and we're going to have the advantage. Or maybe I can't complete the deep throw, but I'm at least going to get us in that position. I can't think Simeon's going to do that. I will say, and this is true because it's the beginning of the season and the injuries haven't set in, the line protecting Siemian should be a lot better than the one we saw in the Super Bowl. I mean, they were really riddled with injuries. And I think that's an underrated story of their Super Bowl run last year is they went through a lot of linemen and were playing with some real retreads and still got the job done. I think this line has to be better. We're going to see him under center, you know, in very much a Kubiak form. You know, this is what Kubiak wants. Remember last year, Manning wanted to be in the shotgun or the pistol, and Kubiak wants a under-center drop-back quarterback. And not that they fought about it, but there was two systems that collided in a big way, and they started out the Kubiak way and then eventually went to the Manning way and had more success with that. Well, there's not going to be any of that this year. I mean, they're going to do what Kubiak says. Siemian and eventually Lynch, they're all going to be under-center players. So it's a little different. Another note, too, just while we're here on the Broncos offense, I want to make sure I mention, is the Broncos extended Emmanuel Sanders' contract since we talked last. And you know, they have a decent trio of Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, and I think Virgil Green is very much an improving player. But as we talk about with the preview that I wrote that I'm going to read out to you guys a little bit, we'll see how much that works. You know, we'll see. Again, I mean, the Siemian situation is clearly worrisome. I don't know how you get away from that. But anyways, when Denver has the ball, here's a couple notes going into the Super Bowl again. No defense in the league is close to the Panthers in taking the football away. Now, one thing I've said about previewing the Panthers going up to today is it's highly unlikely for them to keep this up. I mean, it just is. You know, their ability to take the football away last year was somewhat unprecedented, and they're probably almost 100% are going to return closer to the mean in this area. That doesn't mean they stink at it, though. I mean, I mentioned Siemian being either a caretaker or the turnover-prone guy at Northwestern, but the lights are going to be bright. Certainly wouldn't surprise me if he threw one to the other team. Now, Josh Norman isn't there, and that's big. But still, the key here is they play a lot of zone, a lot of eyes on the quarterback. You know, the keep everything in front of you. And the huge key is their linebackers are ridiculously good for the Panthers, and they cover so much ground, and they play the ball so well in the air that I don't think there's going to be space for Virgil Green, you know, and that's a problem. And the safe dump-off throws to the running backs, these linebackers, especially Davis and especially Kuechly, just watch Kuechly tonight for a while. If you don't realize how good he is, he's by far the best linebacker in the league. Like I said, he's on a Ray Lewis-like career path. Watch him for five plays in a row and your jaw will drop. But they just close on running back screens and dump-off passes so well, and they're a really good tackling defense. So a lot of zone, great at taking the ball away. I imagine they'll still be very good at it. I just can't imagine it'll be at the same rate as last year. And, you know, one of the reasons, too, is Norman isn't there, too. So, again, reading going into the Super Bowl, this was another thing I wrote, was the weakest area of the Panthers' defense is the cornerbacks other than Josh Norman. Well, Josh Norman isn't there anymore. And there's two rookies, second and third round pick, that are probably going to be starters with B'nai Ben-Wickery, who was not available for the Super Bowl, as their slot guy. I think that's going to how it's going to play out. We'll verify that, obviously, once the game starts. But, man, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas against two rookie corners. And cornerback is clearly one of the most difficult positions in the league to transition to as a rookie. It's just brutal. I mean, you got to keep your hands off the guy more than in college. Yes, this is a system that's very cornerback friendly, and I mentioned how Carolina cuts corners at the tackle position. Every team cuts corners somewhere. Panthers are just the most obvious. They cut corners in the secondary because everything's about their front seven and their active linebackers, and they cut corners at tackle. If it wasn't Simeon, and if it was somebody that I trusted at quarterback, and you know, against Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders against these set of corners, it's a big, big advantage to Denver. And can Simeon capitalize on that? I have my doubts. So let's go back to a couple other things. No defense drives on the ball and capitalizes on mistakes like Carolina. And basically, that's what I just told you. You know, if their linebackers make so many problems go away, they attack downhill, they're phenomenal. And you know, here's what I was saying along those lines, too, is not only is Luke Kuechly the best second-level defensive player in the league, but he's also the best coverage linebacker with amazing range, anticipation, and route recognition. Carolina's other linebackers are also very athletic and show great range. And maybe even more so this year. I mean, Shaq Thompson's in his second year. When those three are on the field together, they just eliminate the middle of the field. And it makes the corners' back jobs easier. It makes everyone's jobs easier. And that's the, you know, what this defense is precedented on. So, going back to Denver's offensive line, which I said is very changed from a year ago for the better. Has to be. But last year, to finish up the season, I said this. Denver's offensive line is much better run blocking than it is in protection, and the Panthers' four-man front will provide an extremely stiff test in this regard. Not to mention Simeon's pocket presence probably leaves a lot to be desired. But on the interior, it's on the interior where Denver's offensive line should really be concerned, with star Lutulele and especially Kawan Short. So I think, you know, the Panthers' defensive ends are good players. Coney Ealy played really well in the Super Bowl. It's his time to shine again against this team. Will he? Maybe. I don't think he's going to become Von Miller overnight. And Charles Johnson's fine, but, you know, I think their defensive ends are average. Their defensive tackles, led by Short, are simply exceptional, though. And that's really a huge concern for Denver's running game, which, again, I think Denver's running game should be pretty darn good this year. I don't know if it'll be pretty darn good tonight, but especially Simeon. I mean, if Short is abusing the inside of that line and getting consistent interior pressure, I could see this passing game, you know, shriveling up and dying to some degree. So in the conclusion of my article, Super Bowl preview, the Broncos have won 11 games by 7 points or less going into that game, an NFL record. I almost forgot that. You know, I've mentioned it. I keep talking about it in all the different outlets I talk football, that Denver's recipe for success is just really tough, and I keep using the phrase, you know, that there's little room for error to win these close games. But I forgot that there was an NFL record that going into the Super Bowl of 11 games they won by 7 points or less. That formula's not going to keep up. It's kind of like the Panthers' turnover margins. You're not going to replicate that every year. As great as your defense is, you're just going to get two or three more bad bounces late in the game, or, you know, there's so many things that can go wrong. And my conclusion, the last thing I wrote here was, didn't come true, but by the fourth quarter, Carolina's rushing game takes over and seals the first Super Bowl win in Panthers history. Well, that didn't happen. I picked the Panthers, like many. They didn't win. You know that. And for them to rebound in this game, they absolutely must run the football more, like I said, you know. And to me, that's a huge key. How do you get Miller blocked? How do you get the edge protection, you know, and allow yourself to take some deep shots? I certainly give the Broncos corners an advantage over even an improved group of receivers for the Panthers. But still, I mean, a couple other notes just now. The Broncos are 9-1 in their last 10 home openers. I think there's a reason for that. Newton has very much been a lesser player, especially statistically, on the road than he has been at home. That doesn't sound so great. I expect this to be a very low-scoring game. And this is kind of the X factor to me, is going... I think it's brutal for any team to go on Thursday night opening day to the Super Bowl's winning team, who's obviously a strong team, home stadium, and try to win. I just think that's a brutal gig, that nobody wants the call from Roger Goodell saying, hey, you've been nominated to be the away team on opening night. Gee, thanks. That's wonderful. Because that's a really difficult environment. But going back to Denver being 9-1 in their last 10 home openers, first off, they're a good team. But I also think there's a major reason for that is, and this is going to play true with teams that are traveling south, you know, as well. Like, for example, Green Bay is going to Jacksonville this week. You think the Packers are going to think it's hot? You know, they haven't played 60 minutes yet in the preseason. They're not quite in that type of shape, although they're phenomenal athletes. They're in wonderful shape. It's not what I'm saying. But the change in climate for not early in the season, I think, is a big deal. And not that it's going to be super hot in Denver, but that altitude. You know, if you're not quite in football shape early in the season from not playing a lot in the preseason, that altitude mixed with heightened emotions, heightened adrenaline, blood pump, you know, heart pumping like crazy because you want to get back at the Broncos because they wronged you in the Super Bowl and you want to redeem yourself on a national audience. I just think in the end, kind of the opposite of what I said for the Super Bowl preview, that Denver's running game starts to take over and they're the more fit team, that stamina is not a problem for them. And as we saw in the Super Bowl too, just the matchups in general, the X's and O's, they do favor Denver, you know, and that game was very good proof of that. So we'll see. I think it'll be a very close, low-scoring game. And I can't wait. But that's my take on it. And trust me, we're not going to go in that depth of every game that ever happens in this league. But it's opening night, man. Another little nugget to discuss involves the New Orleans Saints. They extended Drew Brees' contract yesterday. So he will be a Saint these next... He'll be for two more years. Two-year extension for massive money. And he was a massive cap hit to begin with. It's just a logical move. I mean, I don't have a lot of take on this, except for if you listened early this week, Drew Brees is my pick for league MVP this year. I mean, I still think he's great. For this team to be competitive with the state of the defense, Brees needs to be phenomenal. And could he fall off a cliff like Manning did last year? Sure, he absolutely could. That could happen at any moment. But he's also, from what I understand, and I think this is quite true, when you go back to Katrina and all the devastation that happened there, that if Brees wasn't a massive fan favorite in that area, then he became even more so during that time of crisis. and is beloved in New Orleans. And I don't think he wants to go anywhere. I don't think they want him to go anywhere. Generally speaking, they're a pretty young team. You know, there's not a lot of veterans on that team that are eating up a lot of money. So if they could start to build something there over the next 2 years, another good offseason of drafting, that could go a long way. They've notoriously been about the most cash-strapped, cap-hell franchise in the league with a win-now mentality. And now they're kind of doing both. You know, I think Carolina's the only team that's better than New Orleans in that division, especially if the defense can be slightly respectable, which we'll see. But right now, I think they're kind of playing the fence of building for tomorrow while still trying to win while Breeze is there and Peyton Breeze connection. But he deserves the money. It's a massive cap hit. But that's what quarterbacks cost. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's still playing great. So, good news. But they cut Garrett Grayson. You know, I guess they're not happy with him. You know, they used a pretty high pick on him not that long ago to be a Breeze-like player. And that's not coming to fruition. But they cut Grayson to make room for Jari Evans, which I think also the Breeze deal helped pay him. This is very good news for the Saints, although I can't promise what kind of player Jari Evans is at this stage of his career. He was cut. He was making a lot of money. But in the Breeze era, there really isn't a team in the league that's dedicated more resources to center and guard. And part of it's because he's short. A lot of it's because he's short. He can't have all these huge bodies right in his grill interviewing or interfering with his line of sight. You know, he's not a 6'5 guy that can stand tall in the pocket, see over the trees, and deliver the football. He needs clear throwing lanes, and he has phenomenal feet to get his eyes in the position to find these throwing lanes. But the Saints have been smart. You know, during the Breeze era, they have had a lot invested in guards, and now with Unger, they got a lot invested at center, and that's on purpose, and they know what they're doing. And I've talked a couple times about this with you, that I viewed this going into the preseason, I viewed the Saints as having one of the league's top 10 offensive lines, you know, not right at the top, but quite good, really good center, really good left tackle, some right tackle's fine, guard was a problem. Pete, the former first-round pick, is tackle turned guard in the NFL. And I bet if you gave him truth serum, he'd be telling you, man, I wish I was playing tackle. But he's been disappointing. So that's where Evans falls in. I'm going to assume, they obviously know more about the situation than I do, I'm going to assume that he's still a starting caliber guard. We'll see that very early in the year if that's true or not. But that, I think, goes a very long way to firming up this offensive line and the interior for protection and the interior for a power running game with Ingram as well. Again, I think the Saints offense is going to be exceptional this year and maybe the best offense in the league. Again, I'm picking Drew Brees as the league MVP. The last thing I wanted to go over with you is a Twitter question I got, I think, the first week that this podcast was started, and it's from @TimNFL. He's been very active with the podcast and interacting with me on Twitter. I appreciate that, Tim. But he had a really good question for me that I could probably talk for hours and hours on, and I've been meaning to get to it and meaning to get to it with you guys, and I just haven't. And, you know, Tim asks, favorite experience in each of your career stages, college, NFL, ESPN, and now freelance? And they've all been awesome. I mean, I don't want to brag, but I think I'm pretty good at my job, and I think I've been pretty good at each of those steps along the way. And more than that, I just love it. And I'm sure, you know, I mean, I get this all the time, that many people would trade seats with me, and for that I'm very, very fortunate, and I'm very appreciative. I get to talk about football and write about football and, you know, watch football for a living, and people pay me money to do it. I mean, what could beat that? But I had a very difficult path to get here, and I've worked very hard. So I don't mean to minimize that. It's not like, you know, a genie came out of the sky and said, hey, Matt, you get to have 50,000 Twitter followers and talk about football all the time, because, you know, it's just the way the world works. So I've worked hard at it. But the college level, some of my favorite things were, first, I was very impressionable and just all eyes and ears at that point. I mean, I learned so much more about football just being around those coaches, absorbing anything I possibly could. I knew nothing about recruiting when I started at Pitt, but I would say the most rewarding thing was, you know, recruit a kid who start watching tape when he's 16, 17. He comes to your summer camps. You meet his family. You meet his coach. He eventually, you know, everyone, we do a big party, and he comes to Pitt, commits to Pitt, gets there. And it's a really difficult transition for those guys. And they really don't have much free time. They're caught, everything's planned out for them. But to watch those kids grow from 16 to, you know, 18, 19, 20, and have got it. You know, like, man, this kid really grew up. Even if he's not a great player, you know. But it's like, man, he's going to be a strong young man. That's a very positive influence on the people around him, the team as a whole. You know, a contributor on the field, a contributor off the field. You know, you saw that a lot through the years. And then you were lucky enough to see some guys. You know, I always talk about Larry Fitzgerald. And, you know, Andy Lee's a perfect example. He's playing tonight and returns home. That get a chance to actually move on in their career and do, like I am, you know, be involved with football for a living. You know, how great is that? So that was highly, highly rewarding. And I still have friendships there, too. And I try to get back. I should get back to Pitt more than I do. But I should stop down there and see my buddy Crystal Sala and some of those people, too. And then when I went to Akron, it was very rewarding because we built a program like overnight. You know, when we got there, it was very late in the recruiting process. We didn't know, you know, we didn't know where the gym was. We didn't know anything. And we're hosting recruit visits and trying to figure out who we could get to become a new Akron Zip. So we would take tours around campus and we would be learning with the parents, and it ended up being a really cool recruiting tool. And I wasn't there super long, and I will say of the jobs I've done, that was the one I liked the least in turn because it was the director of football operations. I just didn't get to do enough football stuff. You know, I was making travel plans for opening day at Penn State, you know, and to me that wasn't what I really wanted to do. I did watch a lot of recruiting tape and I was involved with recruits. That was great. But we got to build a program with a lot of young guys that were about my age, young assistant coaches, a first-time head coach, and J.D. Brookhart, who was really, really a good guy. So that was highly rewarding. At the NFL level, the coolest thing was just I was in the NFL. You know, that's what I dreamed about my whole life. Like, I want to scout in the NFL at some level. And I got a chance to do that. You know, I mean, I get to walk out on the field, and Browns were playing the Bengals that day, and there's Carson Palmer. You know, there's Jonathan Ogden, there's Ray Lewis. You know, this is all pretty damn cool. You know, I'm part of this, and I learned a ton in that year as well, good and bad. You know, things to do and not to do, and you know, what could be more rewarding than, you know, being a part of an NFL team, walking out to practice, seeing how much different the players were at the NFL level than they were at the college level. And I'm giving you the nickel tour here on all this, obviously, because again, I could talk for 3 or 4 hours about it, but I'm just giving you a couple highlights to Tim's questions. And then I put 10 years in at ESPN, and that was so different for me because there was no game day. You didn't go down to the weight room and lift with the guys and have them laugh at you for how much little you could bench, or, you know, I wasn't given tours. I wasn't interacting with the team, but they were a phenomenal 10 years for me. I mean, I met a lot of good friends. I got to become, you know, I got to do podcasting almost every day for 10 years, you know, 5 days a week, basically, write articles, you know, meet so many people. One of my regrets, well, I loved it because I worked from home. I lived in Pittsburgh that whole time, still do, and I'd only go up to Bristol a couple times a year. So it'd been great to have more FaceTime with some of those people that were in the office instead of emailing back and forth and phones and all those type of things. Or, you know, like Roflo and I or Russ Tucker and I, you know, we do a podcast and we were never face-to-face, hardly ever. Been great to get more FaceTime with those people. But in the meantime, I got to see my kids all the time. You know, I mean, if I would have been still with the Browns or Pitt, I never would have seen my kids grow up like I have for these 10 years. So that's really been the best part of it, putting them on the bus, getting them off the bus, dealing with all those things. Sometimes I wish they'd go away. You know, I can't argue that. I mean, a 10 and an 8-year-old can get a little bonkers. But overall, that's one of my absolute highlights, and that carries over to what I'm doing now, which I guess is a good way of putting it, is freelancing, is writing for several outlets, a lot of different podcasts if you haven't figured that out. But like this is so much fun. It's a brand new podcast. I get to do anything I want. You and I chatting for half an hour, you know, talking about the rest of the Locked On Network. How rewarding is that? You know, and maybe it's never going to be the top podcast on the planet. Maybe it will, you know, but, you know, to go to iTunes and read all the reviews. I think every review is a 5-star review from you guys. I mean, talk about rewarding. How great is that? You know, that you guys are enjoying our conversations every day and you're telling the world about it. I mean, that's phenomenal. And on that note, I very much appreciate it. The season starts today, so this is not an emotional time, but it's a big day. It's a big-ass day, and I can't wait to watch live action. Busy day ahead of me to prepare for that, and you and I will meet again tomorrow.
Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flo.
When Flo flows, she flows in the know. Mind ruminates, the wraiths. Shown them all, I heed the call. Seeing the rest, I choose the best. Sometimes it's ours, sometimes it's not. When the fox walks, is it called a fox trot? That's a real question.
Compare Progressive direct rates with competitors' rates. Visit progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.